From PRX and KUER in Salt Lake City, this is Preach. I'm Lee Hale. Preach is a podcast about the messiness of faith. After years of being a religion reporter covering institutions and culture wars, I wanted to talk to real people about how they really live their faith and wrestle with life's big questions. On the show so far, we've talked with people who have converted to a new religion, I talked with somebody who escaped a cult, and I even talked with an Orthodox Jewish sex therapist. But this hour, a story about what happens when you combine faith and business, a really big business that becomes beloved by millions of kids in the 90s, including me.
Oh, where is my hairbrush? Oh, where is my hairbrush? Oh, where, 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 oh, where is my hairbrush?
That is one of the best known songs from VeggieTales, a computer-animated Christian show for kids that debuted in 1993. It's about a group of vegetables who sing and dance and teach kids morals based on Bible stories. Because why not? The band of characters is led by Bob the Tomato and Larry the Cucumber. And at its peak in the late 90s, VeggieTales was everywhere. It had spin-off shows, toys, games, even a feature film. And kids loved VeggieTales. Their parents loved VeggieTales too. Especially this parent.
Hello.
Hey, Mom.
Hi.
I grew up in a devout Mormon household with 8 siblings, and we watched a lot of VeggieTales. It was good, clean fun, and it was explicitly teaching us lessons from the Bible. There were catchy tunes talking about the Old Testament.
Long, long ago, in a faraway land, there lived a young man named Daniel. When Daniel was a boy, he was taken from his home in Judah to live in a city called Babylon.
It was all catnip to Christian parents.
Just seeing little vegetables, which it just sounds so ridiculous, but they had personality and they were endearing, and it was just a lot of action and teaching a Bible story too. So it was really winning on every level.
And some parts were just silly. On purpose.
And now it's time for Silly Songs with Laddie, the part of the show where Laddie comes out and sings a silly song.
Like my personal favorite,
the Water Buffalo Song.
Everybody's got a water buffalo. Yours is fast, but mine is slow.
VeggieTales isn't just a big deal for me. It's a big deal for a lot of millennials. So I wanted to get to know the people behind Bob and Larry. The wacky minds that created a media empire by making cartoon vegetables sing about the Bible. Their story has it all. 24-hour diners, wind-up lobsters, and a lot of puppets. But also a box office flop, a lawsuit, bankruptcy, a crying Midwestern mayor, and through it all, faith. Faith is a central part of this story through all the highs and lows, and there are enough of both to make for quite the roller coaster ride. They did almost build a VeggieTales theme park, after all. But since that theme park was never built, instead, let's start with the theme song.
If you like to talk to tomatoes, if a squash can make you smile, if
from KUER and PRX, this is Preach. And the story of VeggieTales.
Down the produce aisle.
Have we got a show for you?
First, let's meet Bob the Tomato. His name is Phil Vischer.
I grew up hearing stories of the amazing things that people were doing for God all over the world. And these were the people that were held up around the dinner table as these people are living lives worth living.
Phil is the creator of VeggieTales and the former CEO of Big Idea Productions, the company that started it all. Growing up, Phil felt pressure to prove his faith. He's from a long line of devout Christians, and he's a descendant of a legendary preacher.
My great-grandfather on my mother's side was the first non-denominational radio preacher in America and preached every Sunday morning on the radio from 1923 until 1964 when he died. One of my relatives was the first European into a whole section of Irian Jaya who carried the gospel to cannibals, literal cannibals.
Whoa.
Yeah. So I was a really shy kid, and I was trying to figure out in my head, how does someone as shy as me live a life worth living? what can I do for God that would be worthwhile? Because I don't see myself as a missionary. I don't see myself as a pastor. I really didn't like to leave the basement where I made my little projects.
During his sophomore year of high school, Phil got his first glimpse of the future. It's 1982, and that's when his neighborhood gets cable TV.
Suddenly, we go from 4 channels to 42 channels coming in through our RCA console television. And one of those channels is MTV.
America, demand your MTV! I want my MTV!
I want my MTV!
I want my MTV!
If you saw MTV in the early years, it was like a 24-hour film festival. It was all these experimental videos. And so as a creative kid, I just ate it up. But I also noticed, as a kid who grew up in Sunday school, many of the value messages coming across in these videos are not the values that I'd learned in Sunday school. And quite often were like the exact opposite. Like, you know, the morality switch had just been flipped in its polarity. And I remember thinking, okay, if everyone my age thinks this is as cool as I do, I think that's a problem.
There was one music video in particular that struck Phil as morally problematic.
I think the Madonna one in particular that really caught me was Like a Virgin, where she's in a wedding dress writhing on the front of a gondola. I'm just thinking, wow, this is really wonderful. What message is she sending to kids? And that was the moment, sitting on the couch watching MTV, where I thought, I can do something about that. I was already making films. I was already playing around with computers. And I thought, okay, I could use these tools in a way that is honoring God and the values that I grew up with. And that was really, I kind of sensed as my moment of calling. I know what I'm supposed to do. And that's what led to, I'll go to Bible college and then I'll go to film school.
He heads to a small Bible college in Minnesota. And that's where Phil first meets the Costello to his Abbott, the Laurel to his Hardy, or maybe a more modern example, Broad City, the Alana to his Abby. He meets the man destined to play Larry the Cucumber. His name is Mike.
My last name is Naraki, which is a good Polish Catholic last name.
Would it be weird at some point if I asked you to do the voice? Is that weird?
No, not at all. It's right there.
It's always waiting and ready. I love it.
That's right.
Very cool. Mike's dad was in the Air Force. So as a kid, they moved a lot. And the family was active in the Catholic Church. Then, after one deployment, Mike's dad returned and something was different.
We found that we had a brand new dad, and he had had a real personal conversion experience that really changed his life and in turn changed the dynamic of our family. We began going to another church affiliated with the Christian and Missionary Alliance denomination. You know, I began getting involved in the youth group and starting to look at God and religion differently and more personally.
The judgment is coming in some future day. We scoff and laugh. But for those of us that know Christ, it's a blessed and glorious hope.
I ended up making what I call a salvation decision, watching a Billy Graham crusade on TV with my dad about a year later.
Every born-again believer, a member of the body of Christ, is going to be joined as the bride to the bridegroom. My seat has been reserved. It was bought for, not with silver and gold, but with the precious blood of Jesus Christ. Is your seat reserved? Will you be there?
But like Phil, Mike was actually a pretty shy kid.
I didn't feel like I was being called to preach. In fact, I didn't like being in front of people and talking. I'm about 6'5", and so I always stood out, but I always didn't like to be seen. So in my 17-year-old brain at the time, I figured out, well, God wants me to be a missionary doctor.
So med school was the goal, but first, Bible college. And this is where Mike and Phil first meet. Crown College is nestled between a couple of little lakes about 30 minutes outside of Minneapolis.
Beginning in 1916 with only 4 students who wanted to study the Bible, it quickly developed into a training school for those interested in ministry and...
By the way, you can see in that promo video that from the sky, the campus buildings form the shape of a giant cross. The school has a lot of rules besides regular academic and theology classes, early morning chapel, strict curfews, and mandatory community outreach work.
You had to be involved in some kind of service project for credit, you know, if you wanted to graduate. You could do visitation of the elderly in retirement homes. And I, no, strangers, don't like it. And then it went down, and you could do street witnessing downtown Minneapolis. And I, heck no, that's not going to happen. I'm just going down this list, getting more and more depressed. And I finally hit the bottom of the list, and it said puppet ministry. I thought, oh, that's a thing you can do for credit? Yeah. And so I showed up for auditions. I hoisted a puppet. I lip-synced a classic Christian kids song, Bullfrogs and Butterflies.
And then Mike, a gangly 6'5" fellow freshman, walks into puppet team auditions. So this is the soundtrack to their meeting.
And then we were all nervous. Are we going to make the team? Are we going to make the team? Because if I don't make the team, I'm going to have to do street witnessing or something.
Right.
We all made the team. In fact, everyone who auditioned made the team.
It wasn't super competitive.
Gotcha. It was not super competitive.
Phil is this, you know, funky looking kid with horn-rimmed glasses, and we were both these really crazy, kooky, kind of out-of-the-box kids.
Mike and I discovered we had a very similar sense of humor.
You know, we were big Jim Henson fans.
We both loved Monty Python. He would stay up late listening to
Dr. Demento
spoof songs.
You know, loved parody music. And so we combined sort of all these elements.
Let's just write the weirdest songs we can think of and then see if anyone else finds it funny. And so we really connected, and we kind of ran the puppet team together, driving around in one of the school vans.
We roamed the Minnesota countryside with our puppet stories and, you know, just had a really great chemistry. In hindsight, was really great training for animation down the line. And, you know, in fact, a lot of the voices that we ended up using in VeggieTales, you know, started off as puppets initially.
They were having a lot of fun, maybe too much fun.
Both Mike and I were asked not to return after three semesters because we'd failed chapel. We had too many chapel skips because we were staying up too late writing.
Is that right?
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
He didn't mention that? He didn't mention that he was kicked out of Bible college for failing chapel?
Everything was squeaky clean from his end.
Holy cow. Well, that's time for the dirt.
Yeah, give me the dirt. How often did you have to go to the chapel?
Chapel was either daily or three times a week.
Wait, so you were just staying up doing puppets?
Yeah, we were staying up being goofy, basically.
Yeah.
Perkins Pancake Houses are very popular in Minnesota, and they're open 24 hours a day.
Right.
Well, you had to be inside by, I think, 10 p.m. or 10:30 on the campus. You couldn't be off campus. So rather than coming back late and getting in trouble, we would just stay at Perkins all night.
Wow. After getting booted from Bible college, Phil ended up in Chicago, and Mike followed along. They both started working at a video production house. This is the late 80s, early, early days of computer animation.
We bought an FGS 4000. It was the first commercially available computer animation system, and it was the one that they did the Dire Straits Money for Nothing video on.
Look at them. That's the way you do it. You play the guitar on MTV. That ain't working.
If you know MTV history, it was the first computer animation, other than logos flying on the news shows, that most people had ever seen.
We were kind of in the right place at the right time in terms of where the technology was at the time. And we had this, you know, storytelling, puppeting background. And we thought, well, what if we combined what we did with puppets with this new technology of 3D animation?
If you look at the state of the art of computer animation back then, it was just rigid, hard, shiny objects. And there was nothing in there that was warm for a kid to connect to. You know, everyone was trying to figure out how to do limbed characters, characters with clothes, characters with hair, characters with real faces, and it was just impossibly hard. And instead, I thought, that's the secret. That's the ticket. Don't try to do limbed characters. Don't try to do characters with hair or clothes. I need naked, bald, limbless characters for Christian parents.
So you thought cucumber, tomato.
No, I thought candy bar.
Oh.
That was my first thought, was candy bar. I'll make a candy bar, and then a whole bunch of candy can tell stories. But I'd just gotten married, and my wife walked by and saw the candy bar on the computer screen. I was working at home, and she said, you know, moms are going to be mad if you make their kids fall in love with candy bars.
Right. Well, more than they already were in love, right?
Yes, right. And I thought, oh, no, she's right. Okay, what is shaped like a candy bar that wouldn't make moms mad if their kids fell in love with? And the next thing that popped into my head was a cucumber.
A cucumber named Larry, who needed a friend. And that's how they came up with Bob the Tomato.
I think in the development of those characters, we wanted to create contrast. You know, the idea of, okay, you know, it's Laurel and Hardy. One is serious, one's kind of goofy. I voiced Larry just because Larry looked like a little bit more the taller, goofier one. And I was a lot less serious than Phil. Phil was very mission-driven, serious in a lot of ways, but still obviously hilarious.
Bob is me on too much caffeine, basically. He needs to come across like a very sincere children's television host.
The first speaking roles they had, we did a 3-minute piece of animation called Take 38.
All right. Veggie Tales promo, Take 38.
What happens is Bob is announcing to the world how amazing this new show called VeggieTales is going to be.
Okay, get this. All the citizens of the kitchen come together. Fruits, vegetables, small kitchen appliances. Regardless of species, color, or brand name, they all come together with one purpose. And that purpose...
Hey, Bob!
And in the meantime, Larry is hopping around behind him looking for his...
Plastic, wind-up, lobster?
Not now. That purpose is to create the most fantastic Christian children's series anyone has ever imagined. A show bursting with positive values, filled with lighthearted stories, songs, and educational materials. A show so bold, so innovative, so earth-shattering, it could only be called one thing. VeggieTales!
So people have asked, were you trying to make kids eat more vegetables, or were you trying to make them eat less vegetables? And my response is neither. It wasn't about diet. It was about technological pragmatism. I was looking for simple characters.
They faced plenty of skeptics along the way because a computer-animated Christian cartoon starring a tomato and a cucumber sounded insane. So in that 3-minute experiment, they even gave those skeptics a voice. They were snooty spears of asparagus.
Just a minute, not so fast. Before this nonsense goes any further, I just want everyone to know that I was against it from the start. Isn't that right, dear?
That's right, he was.
Yes, when that pickle came up to me,
It's a cucumber, dear.
Oh, yes, whatever. As I was saying, that cucumber came up to me and asked me what I thought we should do this weekend. I suggested a Caesar salad might be nice. We hadn't done one of those in a while. But no, they decided to do a television show instead. I mean, really. You put vegetables in salads. You use them as side dishes. Occasionally, you might use them as an aesthetically pleasing garnish. But you never, never put vegetables on television. It is simply not done.
Coming up, how these simple screen tests launched Bob and Larry into a business that grew faster than Phil and Mike could have ever imagined. This is the story of VeggieTales from Preach. This is the story of VeggieTales. I'm Lee Hale, host of the podcast Preach from PRX and KUER. The first VeggieTales promo was getting some interest from Christian media companies. Investors wanted to see a full episode, though. If they liked it, they might invest in the show. But even to make a 30-minute pilot, the creators, Phil and Mike, needed money. And it had been over a year of trying to sell investors on VeggieTales with no luck. Phil, aka Bob the Tomato, he was all in. He quit his full-time job, but he was feeling stuck and broke.
And I remember thinking, this is what God wants me to do. This is what God wants me to do. I've felt it, you know, since I was on the couch watching MTV. This is what God wants me to do. So he should show up somewhere in this and help me. But he just wasn't. And that came to a head. We just had a daughter. So we had like an 18-month-old. And we ran out of money, completely ran out of money. We came down to our last 10 bucks, literal last $10, and discovered that we were out of dog food. And I remember at that time, a big bag of Purina was 10 bucks. So my wife said, so what do? Do we spend it on the dog food? And I said, spend it on the dog food. And so she took my last 10 bucks and drove to the store to get a bag of dog food. And I'm sitting at the dining room table, just depressed and thinking, what a fool I am, feeling like a complete loser. I misheard God. He wasn't talking to me. I wasn't supposed to do this. And now I am not able to take care of my family. So to get my mind off that depressing thought, I started flipping through the mail in front of me on the table, and there were bills that I couldn't pay. And then I got to an envelope that had no return address on it that was addressed to me. And I opened it up, and there was an anonymous cashier's check for $400 and a handwritten, unsigned note that said, "God laid it on my heart that you might need this." And I still, to this day, have no idea where that came from. But it was like God just walked into the door and sat down next to me and said, "I did call you to do this, and I am in it with you. It's not going to be easy, but just keep going." And so I kept going. I never doubted again that I wasn't doing what God wanted me to do. And we would look back to that and say, "Remember the dog food? Remember the dog food?" So wow. God was there then. God will be there going forward.
For somebody who hears a story like that and thinks like, well, maybe that person just knew you're going through a hard time and they wrote a check and God had nothing to do with it. For you as a believer, what role does God have in a moment like that?
Yeah, almost every moment in my life where I believe God showed up in a profound way, someone else could chalk up to as, well, it was just a coincidence. And it could be. But when I look at the timing and I look at where I was emotionally, when you start to see that pattern across your life of being at the end of your rope, one of my favorite Christian authors is Dallas Willard. And he has this comment of, where do we find God? And his response is, God's address is the end of your rope. You know, so when you're at the end of your rope, when you're desperate, I have found that's when I'm most likely to have some experience that I would attribute to the divine, some experience with God. And when you see a pattern of those, not only over your lifetime, but over the lifetimes of my parents and my grandparents and my great-grandparents and other people that I admire that I've read about or know personally, it becomes harder and harder to say, yeah, that's just a coincidence.
So the dog got his dinner, and after a couple of years, Phil got the funding not to make just one, but 13 episodes of VeggieTales. They formed a company, Big Idea Productions. Phil was the CEO, but the work had to be done scrappily still. They only had one computer at the time, so they had three guys working around the clock in shifts to make a Christmas deadline.
And it was so hard to do one. It about killed us all. After we shipped that first VHS, you know, running to the post office on December 23rd, you know, to mail off all of those VHS tapes, you know, we hadn't slept in weeks, and it was just so hard to get it done.
Hi, kids, and welcome to VeggieTales. I'm Bob the Tomato. And I'm Larry the Cucumber.
That first episode is called Where is God When I'm Scared? And from the very beginning, you can see the ingredients that will become the winning recipe for VeggieTales. First, Bob and Larry set out to answer a question from a little girl.
Dear Bob and Larry, I am 6 years old. Sometimes I think there are monsters in my closet. That makes me real scared. Can you help me?
Yes, they can. And to help her, they tell her the story of Junior Asparagus. Junior Asparagus watches a scary show on TV right before bed.
Hey, come back here! Don't go near that door!
And then, understandably, he has trouble falling asleep.
I'm not scared. It was just monsters.
Bob and Larry crash into Junior's bedroom to help. And it just so happens they have the perfect song for his problem, which happens a lot in the episodes to come. There is a lot of music.
God is bigger than the boogeyman. He's bigger than Godzilla or the monsters on TV. Oh, God is bigger than the boogeyman, and he's watching out for you and me.
And the basic message is this.
So you're saying God's the biggest of them all, and he's on my team.
That's right.
Then we switch over to a silly song with Larry, pivot to the parable of Daniel and the lion, and then...
And so what we have learned applies to our lives today. And God has a lot to say in his book.
Their trusty computer spits out a Bible verse.
And God said in Isaiah 41:10, "So do not fear, for I am with you."
And that's it. That's the basic combo of ingredients that veggie fans would come to know and love. A kid asks a question, some veggies act out a story, slip into a non sequitur silly song with Larry, learn a parable from the Bible, or occasionally a moral lesson from elsewhere, but almost always the Bible, all led by Bob the Tomato and his goofy cucumber friend, Larry. VeggieTales was in the right place at the right time, because by the early 90s, practically everyone had a VHS player at home.
And the ability to actually create something that you could then sell at a bookstore or through the mail that you didn't have to put on TV, you know, because the gatekeepers for television world, we weren't going to get anything faith-based in through those doors.
They also had an important advisor from the start.
Phil's mom, Scotty May, you know, she's got a doctorate in Christian education, and so she was a consultant at the very beginning, too, and just in terms of trying to make sure that we were really boiling down the lesson to something that a preschooler could understand.
Phil's mom just had one important rule for their silly show, no veggie Jesus. People from the Bible could be portrayed by squash and asparagus and peas, but no plant-based versions of the Holy Trinity. For that first episode in the early 90s, they offered up the show as a VHS available to purchase by mail in Christian parenting magazines.
For about 2 years, always in danger of missing payroll. I couldn't make payroll. I was close to missing payroll. I just barely got enough in to make payroll. Ah, can we sell a few more videos next week so I can make payroll? And then Christmas of 1996 is when something happened.
New from VeggieTales.
Oh boy, oh boy, oh boy. It's Christmas, Bob.
Then we got a call from Kmart saying, hey, can we have VeggieTales videos? Because they were only in Christian bookstores up to that point. And then they were in Walmart, and then they were in Target, and then sales were doubling every year.
USA Today calls VeggieTales fast-moving and sophisticated.
So then we started hearing about parties on college campuses to watch VeggieTales. And, you know, Larry the Cucumber t-shirts showing up at dance clubs.
If you like to talk to tomatoes, yeah. If a squash can make you smile.
VeggieTales from Big Idea Productions. Sunday morning values, Saturday morning fun, wherever videos are sold.
Gotta be
VeggieTales.
And then we were showing up on the best-selling charts for all of video, not just for Christian video. In 1998 and 1999, VeggieTales was the number one selling kids video in the world, non-theatrical. So it was on fire. To me, that was indication that God wanted me to build something huge.
And it was huge and growing fast. From just a couple of guys on a single computer to a company of more than 200 people in less than a decade. But then...
Oi! Somebody up there must be really upset with somebody down here.
It was sort of the perfect storm.
Okay, God, this is definitely not part of my plan.
Things start to fall apart. The story of VeggieTales continues in a moment on Preach. You're listening to Preach from KUER and PRX. I'm Lee Hale. So by the late 90s, Big Idea Productions was making millions, selling VeggieTales videos and merch. Their unique blend of Bible stories and silly songs were a staple of a TV diet for lots of kids in the 90s. Cara Bettis was one of those kids. As the daughter of a pastor, she grew up watching the original cartoons with her siblings. I asked if she considers herself more of a Bob or Larry.
Probably more like bossy Bob. I would have loved to be a mischievous troublemaker like Larry, but, you know, I'm the oldest sibling, so just relating to the bossiness of just wanting things in order all the time.
And that purpose...
Hey, Bob! Have you seen my plastic wind-up lobster?
Not now.
Now, Kara is an editor for the magazine Christianity Today. She says the rise of VeggieTales in the 90s changed the game for religious media.
Christian film was a little cheesy, and there wasn't actually a lot of alternatives for Christian kids' entertainment. It really filled a need, definitely raised the bar in terms of the quality of Christian film, because those were pretty quality cartoons for the early 90s because of the quality of the films. Between 1996 and 1999, their revenue went through the roof. You know, they're up to like $44 million franchise, which is crazy.
So what went wrong? How did the makers of the best-selling kids video series in the world go bankrupt? Well, they took a couple of big swings that did not go well. One of the first signs that trouble was brewing for the business came when Phil tried to build a new headquarters for Big Idea Productions. And where should this booming animation studio put down their roots? Not New York, not LA.
The village of Lombard is just 21 miles west of Chicago, with easy access to O'Hare and Midway International Airports, expressways, and regional
mass transportation. I want to talk about Lombard, Illinois.
Oh, boy.
Tell me what your vision was for Lombard. It wasn't necessarily that the city you might think of as being like exciting and sexy and a great flagship. This was kind of a sleepy town, right?
There was an old movie house, the DuPage Theater, that was a nationally registered historic place that was built in 1923, I think, that was half empty, kind of sitting there on the verge of falling apart. So in my mind, I'm thinking, okay, wouldn't it be great to save an old historic building? And fans could come and you could do tours, and then maybe you could add a restaurant or a store, and then maybe someday, you know, and then my mind starts going off in crazy directions and someone has to tie me down.
And so you made this announcement. You promised the city that we're going to do this thing. We're going to revitalize.
Oh, yeah, of course. We had a groundbreaking. The Chicago Tribune attended. The mayor of Lombard was there wearing a Bob the Tomato tie and a shovel and a hard hat. And about 2 weeks after the groundbreaking, we finally got the full construction cost estimate in, which had taken a long time. And it was significantly higher than we thought. And at the same time, our bank had decided they wouldn't loan as much for us to do the project, which meant we didn't have the money. So just as we're breaking ground, literally about to start digging with the big, giant machines, we had to call the whole project off, had to call the mayor of Lombard in and say, we're sorry, but the whole thing has fallen apart. He said later that he went home that night and cried. So I thought, great, that's exactly was my plan for my life, was to make small town mayors cry because of my failed plans.
Was he still wearing the Bob the Tomato tie when you told him?
I hate to have to say this, but yes, he was. He put on his Bob the Tomato tie to come in for the meeting because he didn't know what he was walking into. And it just turned into a mess. I'm just sitting there thinking, okay, God, this is definitely not part of my plan.
So Lombard was a bust. And the next financial blow came from placing a huge bet on a risky venture. Their first full-length animated feature film.
The biggest fish story of all time. Big Ideas Jonah, a VeggieTales movie. Only in theaters 2002.
Holy mackerel!
It was based on the Bible story of Jonah and the whale. You know, that guy that was ignoring God and then got thrown into the sea and got swallowed? That one.
We had slowed down on our home video production in order to produce our first feature film. And kind of the story behind that is we really felt like we wanted to grow the company to be able to make more of a cultural impact. And, you know, feature films are a great way to do that. But at that time, no studio was going to bankroll a feature film with faith-based content.
So Big Idea Productions sank a ton of its own cash into making the animated feature film. And by the night of Jonah's premiere, you could say that the boat was taken on water.
So everyone who had worked on it, we flew everybody in, and we're having a premiere downtown Chicago at a big theater just for everyone who worked on the film and their kids and spouses. And then the next morning, we were doing a cruise on Lake Michigan for everybody as kind of the official wrap party. I was thanking everybody before the screening and fighting back tears because we'd already realized what trouble we were in and that the next morning I was going to have to lay off half of the studio. And it was just a profoundly bittersweet moment of trying to celebrate what all these people did, sacrificing so much and working so hard, at the same time knowing that it was the end. Kind of a funeral for a dream that you've been nursing and chasing. At that point, I think it was 14 years. Building toward that moment of making my first feature film, and then to have the celebration of that moment also be the funeral of that moment. It was brutally hard to stand up there and say, you know, hey, good job, everybody. Wait till you hear what I have to tell you tomorrow morning.
Man, that is not how movie premieres are supposed to go. And the movie actually did okay at the box office, just not well enough. It wasn't the final nail in the coffin for Big Idea Productions, though. That would get hammered in by a different culprit.
I love you, you love me, we're a happy family.
That's right. Bob the Tomato got taken to court by Barney the Dinosaur. Well, not exactly. It was Barney's parent company. The trouble started when Big Idea sold the VeggieTales distribution rights to Warner Brothers for $15 million. But Lyric, in addition to being Barney's parent company, had a pre-existing deal to distribute those videos. Lyric said, "Not so fast. You breached your contract." So Lyric sued Big Idea. And suddenly, it was Barney v. Bob the Tomato in federal court. Big Idea argued they had done nothing wrong. No contract violations. Now it was up to the jury to decide.
In my head, it was the moment where God would ride in and save the day. And he didn't. And I, you know, went in and sat down to hear the verdict, and the jury gave them everything they were asking for in damages, about $14 million in damages. It was completely clear that the company was done.
Phil didn't just lose the company in bankruptcy. He lost the rights to the VeggieTales characters. Big Idea had put the intellectual property up as collateral on a bank loan. Phil had lost control of his creations. Bob and Larry got bought up by new owners. And Mike says that's what hit Phil the hardest.
That was a very, very difficult time. And, you know, each of us struggled with different things. I think Phil, you know, because he was much more the entrepreneur, he was leading the business. You know, for him, it was the loss of control of all of that. I remained with the company and continued to make VeggieTales.
I asked Phil if he ever blamed God.
I really didn't. What I gave up on was my certainty and my theology about what God would or wouldn't do. I thought, okay, you know, I've seen God show up enough in my life that I know he's real and he's active. So I'm very curious why he didn't show up here today.
After the dust settled, what did this mean for Mike and Phil's friendship? Did the bankruptcy change your relationship with Phil at all?
We were best friends going into business, and I think that has its advantages and disadvantages. And particularly since it wasn't an even pairing, Phil was definitely more, he ran more of the business side. And so, you know, there was tensions in our friendship by nature of being in business together, that once the bankruptcy dissolved that business relationship, we could kind of go back to being friends again.
Is your faith different?
As a young Christian, you're much more sure about being right about everything, about your doctrine and everything. And then as you get older, you realize how much mystery there is in the world and how much you just want to leave a lot of room for God's mystery, for God's grace, and for God's mercy.
Is there a song or an episode that comes to mind for you because it's a lesson that you need repeated?
Probably the third or fourth VeggieTales episode I wrote and directed was Esther.
Our hero isn't a king, just an ordinary girl.
It's a story where God had called this girl, Esther, into a life that she had never imagined, you know, gave her this opportunity.
She wasn't born for greatness. She didn't go to school for it. She just learned that sometimes God has plans so big only he can see them. All she had to do was believe. Yup, she was just a regular kid. Just like you.
I kind of come back to that. You know, God has put you here for such a time as this, and to just be open to what God has for you. You know, you can make your own plans, but God will direct your paths.
Mike's path was to stay with the new Big Idea, working for the new owners in Nashville. Phil stayed in Chicago and struck out on his own, making new shows and writing books about the Bible for kids. But even as the characters passed from new owner to new owner over the last decade, Phil has never stopped doing the voice of Bob the Tomato.
I've related at one point to the state comes and they take away your children. And they put your children in foster care. But then the foster family calls and says, "We don't really know what to do with these. Can you come and help?" On the front end, it just makes me angry. You know, it's like, well, if you need me, then give me the tomato back. But then I realize more and more that, you know what?
the tomato was never mine. It's God's tomato. Everything that I have because of God, and God can do whatever he wants with it. And once I looked at it that way, it became much easier.
For a long time, Phil thought he was supposed to be the Christian Walt Disney, destined for the kind of greatness that begets an empire of shows, toys, films, even theme parks. And this intense ambition caused problems for him spiritually. And he admits it even caused problems for the business, too.
So in many cases, it was people coming to me and saying, Phil, I think we're going too fast, or I think we're spending too much, or maybe we should slow down a little. And it was me saying, no way, man. I'm the Blues Brothers with my sunglasses on at night. I'm on a mission from God.
We're on a mission from God.
And so it was me that was often vetoing more rational input to pursue, you know, what I felt was my God-given destiny, I think.
What was hard about trying to be both a boss, but then also inspirational to people who may have been drawn there for Christian values, mixing with employees that were not there for that?
Once it became successful, now every Christian animator in the country wanted to work at Big Idea. Where it became tricky is we still had our core team, which was mostly local Chicago art school kids. And now we were throwing in these really mature Christians who were very excited to work someplace Christian. And it became a bifurcated culture. And I didn't know how to put that together because the Christian artists that coming in was like, when are we having Bible study? You know, when are we having prayer meeting? And then the non-Christian kids that I love just as much and were, you know, just as good artists were saying, wait, is that what this is? Wait, do I have to go to that? And it was really tough. So in the end, we had some of our non-Christian artists leave saying, this is too much like a church now. We had a couple of our Christian artists leave saying, this isn't enough like a church. I managed to disappoint people on both ends.
Phil and Mike really considered VeggieTales as their ministry. That's why it stung so much when, a few years later, after the bankruptcy, NBC bought the rights to air old Veggie episodes and started scrubbing the religious references out of the show. Even the show's main message, its ending tagline,
God made you special and he loves you very much,
was turned into the uber secular,
hey kids, thanks for coming to my house today. See you next week.
It upset Phil that NBC would not air the original episodes as is, but he wasn't surprised.
It was kind of a facepalm moment of, well, of course they can't. I was shocked when you said they could. So that was not a huge surprise. It was disappointing, but, you know, Hollywood is Hollywood.
Maybe the saddest thing about all of this was that lawsuit with Lyric, that was eventually overturned. So there was some vindication there, but the company had already gone belly up. The damage was done. And Phil had learned a valuable lesson. He says he let the dream of VeggieTales get way too big, and he let it blind him from a much simpler and more satisfying approach to life. The idea inspired the name of his new company, Jellyfish Labs.
A jellyfish cannot change directions. So a jellyfish has to stay in the current and trust that the current will carry it where it needs to be, to find food, to escape predators, anything. It's just up to the current. And I realized that I had, spiritually, theologically, I was conceiving myself as a big studly barracuda. Like, okay, God, look at the amazing things I can do. Now, if you'll just bless me, then stand back and watch me go. And I realized, no, I'm not a big studly barracuda. I'm much closer to a brainless, spineless bag of goo that, as a follower of Jesus, I get my form, my purpose, my shape when I'm in the current of his will.
Phil's relationship with VeggieTales could have ended right there. His jellyfish state of mind was carrying him in new directions on new projects. But the thing is, Phil isn't just a jellyfish. He's Bob the Tomato. Like Michael Corleone in Godfather Part 3, he keeps getting pulled back in. He voiced Bob for a Netflix reboot in 2014 called VeggieTales in the House. Millennials who loved the original series took issues with a few things. The scripts, the watered-down Christianity, and, most importantly, the unsettling addition of eyebrows to their favorite animated vegetables. In 2019, VeggieTales got back to its roots.
VeggieTales, the best Christmas gift.
Have we got a show for you?
a new series featuring the VeggieTales characters launched in the fall of 2019. And this time around, Phil isn't just the voice of Bob the Tomato. He's back in the writer's room.
What feels great is to go in and do the voices and their words that you wrote. Like, yes, that is what Bob would say in this situation. That
is. This new show is exciting because he's actually involved creatively. And so he's actually able to shape and develop the story.
That's Cara Bettis, the Christianity Today editor who grew up on the VeggieTales. And she says it's encouraging to fans of the original show to have Phil back in the mix again.
And so this new show is, you know, really exciting, I think, for some people who are now grown up. It's kind of like when the new Star Wars came out or something like that. And people were excited to see because they had grown up with them and had fond memories of them.
In the age of the internet, both fans and critics make themselves heard loud and clear. And VeggieTales can't please everyone, of course. Just recently, Phil mentioned in an interview with an online magazine that he wasn't a fan of the way another kid's show, Arthur on PBS, had handled showing a gay wedding. That got written up in a bunch of clickbaity headlines, which got picked up online by the left and the right and resulted in a tornado of angry tweets. Well, Phil had made those comments after we'd done our interviews, but I wanted to give him a chance to tell you how he felt in more than 140 characters. So I called him up. He was outside a cafe when we talked.
You do expect for LGBT representation to start showing up in kids' shows. It's the cultural direction right now. But when it first shows up, especially in a show for young kids, as a producer, I never want to put myself in between a parent and their kids and try to give their kids a message that their parents wouldn't agree with.
And remember, Phil's working on the show again, yeah, but he's not the CEO anymore. And so he doesn't get to unilaterally decide what goes in or what stays out of a VeggieTales script. But I asked if it was up to him. Does he know how he would approach LGBT representation?
Heck no. My feeling is it would be like trying to address women ordination in a children's video. Absolutely, you're guaranteed to lose half your audience regardless of which way you go. There are going to be a whole variety of positions within. There are affirming churches, unaffirming churches, you know, churches in between. There's a continuum of reactions within churches. And to try to come up with one statement that works for young children of all of those traditions would be very near impossible.
The interesting thing to me is, like, so you create this kids show that teaches morality, but do you have to have a healthy distance between what you, Phil, think and what kind of the philosophy of the show is?
Yeah, my job is not necessarily to make everyone think like I think or to present my point of view. My job is to present my understanding of the Orthodox Christian position. I would refer to it as centrist evangelical Christianity.
That wasn't the first time VeggieTales had stirred up some controversy online. In 2018, a college student from California State University in San Marcos argued that some of the Veggie characters had racially insensitive accents, and that the show often gave those accents to characters who were villains. That class assignment went viral, and Phil says the way the show handles voices now has changed a lot since they started.
Suddenly the world changes and you have to go back and think, wait a minute, is it appropriate that I'm doing all those voices? Which voices am I allowed to do and which voices am I not allowed to do? The rules have become a little confusing. So DreamWorks first set the rule internally that any ethnic voice needed to be done by a person of that ethnicity. That's the new world and we just have to figure out how to make it work.
This issue is not unique to VeggieTales' back catalog, by the way. Looney Tunes doesn't quite hold up either, and The Simpsons have been scolded for their Indian character, Apu. So 2019 is a very different landscape than when the VeggieTales started more than two decades ago. But their goal is still the same, teaching biblical morals to little kids with a wacky cartoon. Faithful fans, pun intended, will likely enjoy these new episodes. This time around, there'll be more about Jesus and the Gospels, too. Because unlike NBC, Trinity Broadcasting Network does not shy away from religion. And even in today's crowded media landscape, I think it's fair to say
there's never, ever, ever, ever been a show like VeggieTales. There's never, ever, ever, ever been a show like VeggieTales. It's time for VeggieTales.
VeggieTales.
Thanks for listening to the story of VeggieTales on Preach. If you enjoyed this episode, then you'll like Preach too. This is a show about the messiness of faith, and I talk to people of all faiths and from all walks of life about life's biggest questions. More info at preachpod.org. This show is a production of KUER and PRX. This show is produced by me and Trisha Bobita. This episode was mixed by Anya Zizik. Special thanks to Tim Slover, Roddy Nickpour, and Chelsea Naughton. Our executive producer is Joel Meyer. Preach is made possible in part by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, a private corporation funded by the American people. Thanks for listening. I'm Lee Hale.